You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 16 April, Chinese GDP came in at 5.3% year-on-year for the first quarter of 2024, up on estimates. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petli Radenhurst from Herenia. So the London Metals Exchange has banned certain Russian origin metals, aluminium, copper, nickel. How can we trade these? I mean, there's South 32, I suppose there's Humulin, BHP. We'll get an idea from Petli, maybe there's an ETF. Lau Sanka, Head of Income at PSG Asset Management. While the definition of risk matters for fixed income investors, Sinisha Pakrasamy from Momentum Investments, how the outcome of the local elections could shift growth in South Africa. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb, how the JSE Top 40 has changed since 1995. Back then, Queen Elizabeth II visited SA, Brad Binder was born, DSTV launched, and petrol less than 2 rand a litre. Business day, municipal arrears to Eskom hit 75 billion rand despite Treasury Relief Programme. This debt has more than doubled since 2021. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P off 1.2%, NASDAQ down 1.75%. The East is mostly red. We've got Sydney down 1.2%, Tokyo down 2.1%, Hong Kong off 1.8%, but Tencent is green, up 0.1%. Commodities mixed, gold $2,405, Brent $90.80 a barrel, and on the red side, PGMs, platinum $982, palladium $1,033, Rand 1904, Bitcoin 63,400, and top 40 looking for a red open, about 855 points to the downside. That is 1.25%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petli Radenhurst from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petli, appreciate the early morning. I mentioned my intro there. The London Metals Exchange bans Russian origin metals. That was effective this weekend. It's aluminium, it's copper, it's nickel. Are these metals you've looked at, you've invested into, got ideas on how we could potentially get exposure to them? It's not just the ban from the LME. It's also, I was chatting yesterday with Schroders around just the massive boom for these and the decades ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. So a couple of things. I mean, these, let's call them diversified industrial metals,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a base case that we've been looking at as we've, I think I've mentioned this a few times to you before, where we kind of foresee this rising of the BRICS nations and a bit of a shriveling of the NATO nations, right? And we can already see that BRICS GDP is outpacing that of sort of the NATO, mm-hmm. call it the Western world, right? And I think as time goes by, we in South Africa are well positioned to take advantage of this changing trend where we essentially see Eastern nations or the BRICS nations, you know, there's already a divergence in performance, already a divergence in monetary policy from the two. China's stimulating, the West is, you know, still sitting with really high interest rates and kicking the cut can down the road, right? So they're not going to be cutting anytime soon. While the Chinese is making moves to try to stimulate their economy, and I think that divergence leads to essentially China, India, Russia growing, while the West is kind of contracting a little bit. And that will obviously be good for these base diversified metals and mining businesses, right? So I think that is sort of one of the base case scenarios that we have for the next 5 or so years, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much impact will this banning of Russian metals have? Well, not a huge amount, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Because we saw the Chinese say explicitly, we will not be banning their metals. They can still trade on our market and we will still buy them. So essentially the same thing that happened with oil, right? So yes, it removes some supply from the market, but what it does is it you know, reduces the cost or the price that the Russians can fetch for their metals, but that means that they have, instead of, you know, five customers, of which one was the biggest, they just have their biggest customer. So, you know, it does remove a little bit of supply. Obviously, it is going to be good for the likes of BHP, Billiton, South 32, yeah. Some of those, you know, the Kumbas of the world. These guys are going to definitely benefit. So any sort of industrial metal producer or refiner or miner in South Africa is, or listed on our market, is definitely going to benefit. But it's not going to be, you know, this is not the doubling of share prices in a week because suddenly, you know, no one can buy Russian metals. The world's biggest producer of stuff and buyer of commodities is still going to buy Russian metal, right? Just because the NATO nations aren't going to, I don't think it's going to have this colossal impact. We've seen how this has impacted oil and natural gas.
Yeah.
In the beginning, there's a bit of a shock, but you know the market adjusts and moves on fairly shortly afterwards.
I take your point. And maybe the biggest story, as you say, is just that shift in a sense where the GDP is coming from BRICS. And we saw that this morning with Chinese Q1 5.3. The Premier, Xi Jinping, only wants 5, so it is better than expected. And maybe it's just the RESI ETF. It's gone from 52 Rand to 67 Rand since earlier this year. Massive move. Peter Edenhaus, Heronia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanley.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Lau Sanker, head of income at PSG Asset Management. Lau, good to have you on the show again. Talking around income investments, your area of speciality, you say that really three objectives at the core, which is capital protection, attractive yields outplacing inflation or cash as the case may be, and low volatility of returns. In essence, that kind of makes it seem really, really simple. But there are, as always, nuances when looking at potential investments or funds.
Good morning, Simon, and thanks for having me on your show. And I hope you and your listeners are well. I think that's correct. I mean, at the essence, it's should be quite simple. When you think about the objectives for an income investor, I mean, that's ultimately what they want to receive, you know, over the period of the investment. And, you know, for us, what we focus on is on the capital preservation side. So limiting the odds of capital loss by focusing on valuation, understanding where we are in the capital cycle. And we think that should be the primary objective. And really what we are seeing in our market gives us a little bit of concern. We are seeing a drive for higher yield at the lowest possible volatility. And we think that at points in the cycle can actually detract from that objective of capital preservation.
Yeah, you make a great point in the note that you put out. Corporate bonds, obviously right now, nice yields, almost no liquidity, so very, very low volatility. But at current rate cycle points, that you're taking on a fairly significant higher risk, i.e. A default. And to your point, that could lead to a permanent loss of capital, which is, you know, rule number one, don't lose money.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I think really the note was sort of focused on the idea that, you know, investors want to sort of compare income funds on a yield basis, looking at things like a Sharpe ratio. So a Sharpe ratio is really giving you a measure of return above a benchmark relative to the volatility of that return. And really, the higher the Sharpe ratio, the better the fund may look. But the problem is exactly what you pointed out now, is that a large part of the fixed income space, being corporate bonds, unlisted or structured notes, they are fairly liquid. And in a sense, you can actually game or manufacture a very attractive Sharpe ratio because these instruments barely trade, or they appear uncorrelated to markets. And if we're just looking at, you know, from our perspective, from a valuation perspective, the compensation for these securities is at a decade low. So the value of moving from cash to these bonds don't offer much attractiveness for investors. And if you think about the cycle, the economic cycle, and where we are right now, we think there are growing risks of losses at a time when incentivization is very high, if you are focused on, the highest yield at the lowest possible volatility.
Yeah, at the point, and I can see, I can see the, how the process would be, right? You've got a list of funds, and you basically say sort by yield, and you think you're doing it. But you make a great line, a line I really liked. You said, we aim to get less wrong rather than pushing for higher yields. And that really is at the core of investing in many cases. Yes, yields are nice, but it's that less wrong. And there are two points to it. Firstly, we're never going to avoid every mistake. That's just not going to happen. So, but it's being cognizant of I suppose, what we're doing. And importantly, looking through and seeing what's in the funds. And that's so key. We saw that with the bridge taxi finance, suddenly disappearing.
Correct. And I think, to that point, we're not going to get everything right through cycles. I think what you want to broadly do is get the odds in your favor. And if you think about the cycle now, besides the point that the valuations are not great on these assets, when you have a very sharp rate hiking cycle like we have experienced in SA, most of these assets are issued on a floating rate basis. So their yields have risen almost solely because the cash rates are higher in SA. But at the same time, if you think about the economic cycle and higher interest rates, you would expect then a slowing economy, particularly in SA. We're already in a tough environment. And that's quite difficult for your lenders or your highly geared entities and particularly consumer-facing entities. And so what we have right now is the drive for higher sharp ratios or highest yield at lowest vol is pushing more assets towards these areas of the market that, at this precise point in the economic cycle, we think it's the wrong thing to be doing. You are exposing yourself then to greater risk of capital loss.
Yeah, it's avoiding permanent capital loss because, as it says, when it's permanent, it's lost, it is gone. We'll leave it there, Lyle Sanker. He's head of income at PSG Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning time. And that is our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you happy with your fixed income fund? Have you dug around? Are you sort of perhaps a little bit cautious of some of the yields which look great but perhaps are at a markedly higher risk? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Sinesha Pakrasamy, economist at Momentum Investments. Sinesha, appreciate the time today. We've got a local election next year, and it's going to be a different election in that at a national level, there is a very real chance, and in fact, the polls are saying it's a certainty, that we'll see the ruling African National Congress below 50% for the first time since democratic voting in 1994.
It's quite an exciting time. Thanks so much, Simon. We are heading into the polls for the first time where the ruling party, the African National Congress or the ANC, really does face quite a real risk of potentially falling below that 50% of the vote for the first time since, the dawn of democracy in SA. I don't think that this really surprises us all that much, given that we are operating in the context of weak service delivery, crippling logistics, energy constraints. We've even seen, perceived insufficient progress in the fight against corruption. And I think that this is all, dragging down that potential vote for our ruling party.
The trick, of course, is that as we witnessed after the 2021 local government elections, coalitions are hard. And the question is, are we going to be Italy and their multiple coalition governments, or are we going to be Germany with immensely stable coalition governments? And history suggests we're probably leaning towards the former.
Sure. So, we've seen this proliferation of more than 350 new parties. Mm-hmm. Altogether, about 350 will be registering for the general elections with the Independent Electoral Commission or the IEC. Now, we know that, of course, it takes a lot of money and infrastructure to be able to contest at the election. So it's not a given that all 350 will be there. But it is a sign that we have a more diverse political landscape. And it is another sign that the opposition in South Africa is maturing. However, the coalitions in South Africa have not had a very good record, as we've seen at a local government level. Since 2016, there have been a number of important urban metros that have been governed by very ineffective coalitions. Now, going at a more provincial or even a national level, we could eventually see, you know, coalition governments at that level, but basically reflecting the same type of ineffectiveness that we've seen at a local government level. And I think that this gives the markets quite a lot of concern going into these national elections.
And whoever or whatever structure, perhaps whatever collection of political parties comes out in charge in June, once we have counted and sorted out coalitions, there are some giant challenges. I mean, you know, not power at the top of them, but broadly it's infrastructure, broadly it's fixed investment just hasn't been happening. These challenges are not going to get magic wanded away just after an election.
100%. And I think this is why we are worried that, you know, we will have a reasonably low voter turnout. Now, we've seen this phenomenon happening on a global scale. So it's not only South Africa specific, but we've seen fewer and fewer people turning out for the vote. Specifically, it's the younger age cohorts that are not really turning up on the day to cast their ballot. And I think this is because people are becoming so disillusioned and discouraged to cast their ballot because of the things you talk about, you know, the high levels of unemployment, the persistent corruption, the poor infrastructure and inadequate education services that much of the youth are facing. And this is essentially what the political parties will have to face going forward. And the effectiveness of the political parties that inherit the governance of South Africa will have to bridge these massive racial and socioeconomic gaps going forward in the South African environment.
And it is. And I mean, the voters out there, who of course are also consumers, they're being squeezed. We've had, I mean, I keep on saying it's been 4 years because of course it was the pandemic, and then it was inflation, and then it was interest rates. It's just been massively tough. Part of the trick, of course, is that some of this really is beyond whoever sits in the union buildings. It's geopolitical factors, oil prices, the attacks we saw in the Middle East over the weekend. There's a lot beyond the control of our government that is also, frankly, hurting a consumer and putting inflation at risk to the upside.
With South Africa being, you know, a small open economy, we do take a lot of our direction in terms of what happens on a global scale. And so, you know, if, for example, China sneezes, South Africa also catches the cold. You know, if we have geopolitical developments going south in the Middle East this year and we see, you know, higher risk aversion in markets, South Africa will be damaged on the back of that, given that it's likely in that kind of environment that the dollar might actually strengthen, being seen as more of a safe haven asset. And that means that emerging market assets like the rand would then suffer on the back of that. So we do have, you know, global headwinds that we have to contest with, but there are also a number of local headwinds, as you've also mentioned. We can no longer rely on, you know, additional government stimulus in an environment where our revenues are under pressure. We are facing softer commodity prices and a slower growth outlook. If we look at the infrastructure side of things, this negative political climate that we've been discussing has been quite poor for the outcomes of infrastructure spending, with, you know, quite a number of businesses reluctant to invest in the economy because of the uncertainty around policy and politics in general. And as you've mentioned, the consumer has been quite strapped in terms of the high cost of living pressures. And we've just come out of, you know, an environment where interest rates picked up by a substantial amount, the highest, you know, increase that we've seen in over 40 years. And so going into this year, we are expecting a slight recovery in growth. But again, it is operating against this very challenging global and local backdrop.
It is. I take your point on that. And currently, we're not having load shedding. There might be reasons for it, but we are enjoying it. And certainly the economy is enjoying it. And I like your point about small and open. We would like to be big, but open is important. We'll leave that there. Sinisha Bakrasamy, economist, Momentum Investments. Always appreciate the insights. That's it for today. I was chatting with Alex Monk yesterday from Schroders. Massive $100 trillion plus is going to be spent on the energy transition over the next couple of decades. I asked if this was the theme of, or part theme of your portfolio. It was evenly split between a third of you saying very much so, around a third saying you're skeptical, and the rest saying, look, keen, but not sure how. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Charles Savage, Purple Results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.